About half an hour ago or so, I looked out the window of my room, and there was a single snowflake wandering about in the air, gradually making its way to the earth. And I thought, I wonder, how is it possible to tell people that the whole of the great truth is revealed right there in this snowflake? And I thought of all the mansions that people live in. I don't mean the mansions that real estate folks deal with, but I mean the structures that provide for some such consolation to wander through them, and those that have sufficient means can add on to it constantly, can put new wings and new rooms and new decorations and whatever in these mansions. And I wondered how is it possible? How is it possible for people to realize that these mansions have such a paradoxical quality about them? That they can be, on the one hand, efficacious in responding to one's particular karma, but most of the time, especially with respect to that little snowflake and the revelations that are totally manifest in such a thing as that little snowflake, these mansions are prisons. Prisons of the most solid sort. And I saw, in the light of that, the whole effort of Zen, Buddhism, to start with Shakyamuni, moving up through all the Indian patriarchs and through China and all the great masters and up to our time, this heritage is preserved of enabling us to know instead of understand, to not deny understanding, but to find in ourselves the way to access what is taught by that taught. What a funny word. It's just being, that snowflake. It has no intention of teaching anything to anybody, nor making any big deal about itself, in contrast to the dwellers of mansions. How? How can people investigate and find that there is no self? This is not hard. Anyone can do that. We've talked about it so often. And use their great minds to analyze everything and find that there is no self entity about anything. Trees, grass, themselves. That from an analytical viewpoint, from an understanding viewpoint, it's not hard at all to see that everything is a manifestation of just one thing, one great interrelated, we say, interconnected pattern. In our meal chants, we express gratitude for those that have contributed to the meal that allows us to do the kind of work that we're doing. And it can be extended back, back and back and back. Farmers, the ground, how that arose, and on it goes. These things are all obvious. And what a strange, strange thing that that doesn't impel people to let go of trying to find something within this that has no substance. Now, I mentioned the snowflake. It has substance, of course. There it is. A person undertaking the practice of Zen has to really contend with what this practice really is. We have the Heart Sutra. Many times we say it is, as far as words can go, the purest expression of the truth of Buddhism. And what does it say? It says basically there ain't nothing. No eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, not anything the mind can grasp, nor any of the objects of the functions of the mind. No ignorance, no end of it, no knowledge or its loss, no withering, no pain, no end of them, nothing. Oh yeah, that's very profound. It's probably is the highest expression of truth, but I can't make head or tail of it. I can't understand. It just says A is B, not A is B, and B is A. And yet, Zen teaches that A is also A, and B is also B. Grass, a blade of grass is a blade of grass. And yet it's an expression of emptiness, of nothing at all that has to do with anything that you can describe. So I wondered, as those things were going through my mind, the fundamental puzzle of a teacher of Zen. The puzzle of how to make the obvious, obvious. How to help a person to find that the obvious is obvious. I wondered if I thought of a particular koan in one of our collections, and I thought, I wonder if that's how Nansen was feeling. The koan goes like this. Master Nansen said, Master Basho said that the mind as it is Buddha. But I do not think so. I say it is not the mind. It is not Buddha. It is not an object. Is there any fault in my saying that? He said that to his assembly of students. At that point, Master Joshu stepped out, bowed, and withdrew. Shortly after, a monk asked Joshu, "What did you mean when you bowed?" And Joshu said, "Go ask Nansen." The monk repeated his question to Nansen, "What did Joshu mean just now?" Nansen said, "He understood what I meant." Now, we said yesterday, or someday, I don't know, someday, that when you open your mouth to even do something that is presumably a virtuous thing to help in your practice, like saying, just this step, just this just this rice, just this breath, just this. The words are always too late. They're always describing something. Oh, I thought they were expressing something. Just watch your mind. See exactly when the words come. Do they come just before you take that step? Do they come just after? Do they come during it? When do they come? Or is that a trick question we Zen folks pose? Is it paradoxical to try to answer that question because it's trying to discern something that ultimately leads you into comparisons and some kind of effort to figure it out? What is the answer to this? And why did Nansen say, is there any fault in my saying that? I thought that maybe Nansen was feeling what I was feeling, or maybe if I put it another way, maybe I was feeling what Nansen was feeling. Looking at that snowflake and wondering, how is it possible to reveal the obvious? So, the only response to any of that, was he doing a disservice to people? People rely on these ideas they have, and they know no other way of finding out something about what they search for, the truth. How did they get to the point to realize such enormous nonsense? This whole activity of searching is enormous nonsense. The person is really intent on practicing Zen. They will take nonsense words really to heart. It is not Buddha. No sense searching there. It is not Buddha. Though we speak of Buddha nature, it is not mine. Though our marvelous mind creates all kinds of things and is so adept at figuring things out, it is not mine. And though we say it is manifest in the grain of grass, in the blade of grass, and in the snowflake, and in the cloud, and in the way a person picks up a coffee cup, it manifests everywhere. And yet, Nansen says it is not a thing. It is not an object. The Heart Sutra said, it is not any content of mind. What do we do? Everyone practicing Zen has to be very honest about this matter. And notice how they enjoy wandering about in their mansion, creating more, trying to understand more, trying to explain more, all the rest of it. Getting consolations that they're smart, that they have a grasp on something or other and that it's significant. And a person has to become profoundly tired of all of that. Profoundly tired of it. And that helps when you're doing Zazen, because when any such thing comes into the mind and tempts you to follow some course of thought, or presents you with something that has some associations of fear or hope or joy or anything connected with it that you understand, and you let it be. You just let it be. You just let it be. And don't care in the world what you might be letting go of and what might the consequences be in everything. As far as I know, there's no known historical record of anyone turning into something other than a human being by becoming enlightened or becoming a blob of jelly or reverting back to being an amoeba or God knows what. There's nothing to fear. The whole thing is just a construction, albeit a mansion, albeit handsome, albeit attractive, albeit comfortable. It's just the construction that's not original. It's not fundamental. So what is the only thing that all practice has to lead to? In order to really know this matter, and to respond, if you could, to nonsense by saying, no, there is no fault. Your teaching is a great virtue. How do you do that? What does get you to that place where that will be the truth? Where you will then be able to see that snowflake? And know that it reveals the whole world. Not in any conceptual way, but in that mysterious way from which a person is barred, kept from accessing by reliance upon mere understanding. How do you do it? What must all this teaching lead to? What must all the Zazen lead to? It must lead to silence. Silence. Absolute, meaning nothing else there. Just silence. No one noticing that there's silence. No one comparing this state with that which came before where there was not silence. No one wondering about what the consequences of cultivating this silence will be. Nothing. No one afraid of nothing. No one deluded by any ideas of nothing or emptiness. That is what this Zazen has to lead to. And that silence comes from this really understanding that all these things that populate mind are fundamentally made up. For they are, in our conceptualizations and in our naming, we break up the one reality which your very analysis can reveal is the fundamental nature of things, but it's still an idea. To know that as what you are, to experience that, is to go beyond all these ideas, to let them all go. If everybody could practice this essence of Zazen, you wouldn't have to worry about how long it'll take to come to awakening. A silence that you don't know is silence. It is so pure and empty. Sometimes this is called a samadhi, but that's all. Another name. Let it go. For if you are in a samadhi, there are no boundaries to this samadhi. There is no way, therefore, to define it, so its name is useless. There is nothing outside of it, nor for that matter inside of it. So everyone sincere about the practice of Zazen has to realize that it is finally going to this place of silence. That silence will teach you everything. It is, as we sometimes call it, a place of not knowing, a place of no knowing, a place from which Bodhidharma came in the famous interaction with the Emperor Wu. When he was asked who he was, he said, no knowing, not knowing, I don't know. Not being fooled to designate something. Because it's all a lie. It's all just arbitrary. It's all artificial. It's all with respect to context and with respect to reference points. The only source of true serenity and joy and wisdom is knowing that that is what you are. You are this thing that cannot be named, from which you, like Hakuin's empty gourd, can produce everything. Everything necessary for you. Everything to interact in the world. Everything. Even hear Hakuin's words that he says in the Zazen Wasan, your singing and dancing is the voice of the Dharma. This is the profound, what do we say, meta-logic of Zen. That's why we call it the one way. This derives directly from just knowing what the nature of human beings is. We create disparateness, separation, ideas, break down this one reality into all kinds of parts that we attribute reality to. Versus becoming silent. Versus having to comment on that snowflake. Having to say something about spring snow, probably the last snow we'll have. Avoiding all these comments. Avoiding all these entertainments of mind. You can hear the profound benevolence, something that Mumon would say that Nansen has shown his liver and his innards by opening his mouth to say, it is not Buddha, it is not mind, it is not a thing. Was he at fault? Zen Master Hakuin has a piece of writing that is called The Poisonous Leavings of the Great Masters of the Past. The Poisonous Leavings of the Great Masters of the Past. All the wonderful things that have been recently in the last 10 or 20 years translated and given to us from the great literature of Zen. The words of the great masters. We find them inspiring. We find them puzzling. We find but are they not turned into poison? It is not that the great masters meant to leave poison. They were all trying to be helpful. But we We, strange beings that we are, have the capacity to turn these great and benevolent things into poison. There are some koan about that. A person comes to a master and quotes some wonderful saying and says, isn't that just marvelous? The master does something to try to induce the individual to step outside of that into direct experience, to awaken from the dream. That is what this is about. Things that seem to be a function of an awakened state, our capacity to think and describe and name and all the rest of it. While they are awake in contrast to the sleep that people do at night, they are nonetheless a dream. And there are levels of this dream. And Zen is about breaking out of this that seemed to be so awake and so full of wonderful things and capacities, to wake out of that, out of the dreamlike nature of it. Dreamlike because none of the things that populate it have any enduring separate substance at all. Just as in a dream that someone might have when they are so-called asleep at night. They have effects. Of course they do. And so do the dreams at night have effects. Being chased by a lion, you get your autonomic nervous system activated in a dream, and it might be activated so much that you wake up and then you say, oh, it was just a dream. Meaning that at that moment you realize there was no substance. How do you step out of the dream that you thought you awakened into? The dream of the so-called reality of the things that you name, and they, through the benevolence of our teaching, have been shown to have no substance. By the use of the intellect, you can see it. There is no substance to them. There are no isolated, separate entityness of any of them. All names are arbitrary. Every last one of them is arbitrary. What do I mean by that? I mean they're not intrinsic. There's an old story I used to like to tell, which is, some of you may have heard it. It reports in the Bible that Adam was given the job of naming all the creatures, and so he and God were sitting there one day, and the creatures were coming by, and Adam was naming them. And everything seemed to be going fine until this creature came with the long neck, and Adam said, oh, that's a giraffe. And God says, why'd you call it a giraffe? And Adam says, innocently, because it looks like a giraffe. And of course, what does that tell about us not recognizing the arbitrariness of things? We have structures in the mind, and we look outside and we say, oh, that's one of those. That's one of those. You're feeling anger. I can tell by the look on your face. And on it goes. That's just like, that's a giraffe, because it looks like a giraffe. We don't realize this is how we operate. Most of you do realize that. That's good. But what's the next step? The next step is to help one to step out of the reliance upon that and to see it as just a joke, a useful joke, but it's all arbitrary. And come to that silence where you are holding to nothing whatever, and you don't finally even know that you're holding to nothing whatever, because that would contaminate the silence. So it has to be purely that. And that can only come when you give up the idea of making anything at all worth holding on to. Anything at all important. you can truly let it all go, because you really are drawn so much to this liberation, as though you've heard about the possibility of waking up from a dream. And that's so important to you, that all else is absolutely, and I use the word absolutely in the absolute sense, there is nothing else, that you're going to let go of everything that is standing in your way. And you forget about standing in your way, and you forget about the things, and you forget about why you're doing it. You just do it, and then there's no doer of the doing of it. And then you get more and more silent. And you just don't care a whit about anything that can come into the field of consciousness. Nothing at all. Silence may then arise in your being. It may arise the way light arises. We have a little preliminary koan where we ask people, when the light comes on, where does the darkness go? All you have to do is just let go of that which has no substance. Really, really know that it is all illusory, in the sense that it is not representing separate selfhood at all. Just let it all go. And that it cannot be realized by mind, by the analytical mind. Cannot. So there's no sense even trying or thinking that you're losing anything important by letting go of all its constructions. Nothing. Was Nansen at fault by telling people in his assembly, there's no Buddha, it's not mind, it's not a thing? Joshua, his great and prime student, got up and bowed and left the room. As if in a manner of saying, to say, he said it all. End of lecture. That's it. And Nansen, of course, recognized that that's what Joshu realized. He understood. So I wonder how to make it obvious that that little snowflake floating about in the spring air is the whole of reality. Please do whatever is necessary in your being to hold to nothing whatever when you're doing zazen. And allow yourself, welcome the dropping away of everything and the coming into your being of silence, in the way that light dispels darkness. We'll end there today.